Yeah, so welcome to Love Stories, man.
Hello, hello.
This is the podcast where we talk about why we fall in and out of love. Today's topic is 2020 October, ghostly love stories.
Yes, and you know what? Honestly, I'm excited. I'm excited because it's cool to like explore my own culture and go back and kind of look at maybe why Latinos we are the way we are romantically, and I've made a lot of cool perhaps connections with Tech mythology that I think might have some answers for me.
But, answers.
Yeah, well, you know, something that resembles that.
I have a question for you, Sergio.
Yeah.
Why do you love scary stories?
Why do I love scary stories? You know, I feel that every human emotion has value, even the negative ones, fear, anger, anxiety, depression, you know, to a certain degree, we feel them because they help us survive in some form. And I feel that humans now, I mean, we rule the planets, and we really don't even have any natural predators. So I'd like to feel fear from time to time because I feel like it's an emotion that we really forget because we don't feel daily. Hopefully you don't feel fear daily. That's
hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully enough.
Yeah, that's maybe part of why I love these kind of stories is because I talk to people all the time who have had like scary experiences, you know. But I just love connecting with fear. I don't know why necessarily. It's just something I enjoy doing.
I love Guillermo del Toro. He his you know, all of his like fantasy, like fear, you know, how he does like horror fables and stuff, you know. And
yeah,
I looked into him a little bit in college for a project, and he basically speaks about how you have to love fear, and you have to love the monsters because they're also beautiful. They're tragically beautiful, and they're part of the human experience and like just emotions.
Yeah, I think we're talking about like the shadow self, that like there's like a part of ourselves that is ugly in some ways, but there's nothing more powerful than inviting the wolf in for dinner and just like making friends with it in a way.
Mm. Yeah.
Keep your enemies closer, right?
Right. Keep your friends closer. I think that's true. But you know, there's something to say about how fun it is to be a little bad. You know, whenever I was acting, I liked playing a villain. I got to explore the dark side of what I felt comfortable portraying on stage or in front of a camera, what I didn't feel comfortable portraying on stage in front of a camera. And then just being like, ooh, not only was I comfortable with that, but a part of me liked stepping into that role for a little bit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In a way that had no real consequence. I think maybe you're onto something with that.
Well, so part of what we're talking about today is that sometimes there are consequences for connecting with something otherworldly or unusual. That's something that I've kind of been encountering a lot lately in just the stuff I've been consuming. So traditionally I listen to a lot of podcasts in October where people just tell stories about paranormal stuff they've experienced.
Yeah.
There's like a podcast called Darkness Radio that, it's kind of old school. Like before there was, Spooked from Snap Judgment, there was Darkness Radio, and it's like very quick and dirty, like live radio broadcasted in a podcast form.
Ooh. It's like the
it's like coast to coast kind of.
Yeah, average day horror comics in a way, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like Bigfoot stories and witches and shadow people and children with dark eyes. It's really fun.
Yeah, like old school horror in a way, but just
yeah.
Stuff that really just doesn't, it's not really that scary, but
But these are people who are saying they've experienced it personally, and they're just
They
calling
swear.
into a radio station in the Midwest. And that's what darkness radio is. They're saying, I experienced this, and I'm just telling my story, and you can decide whether it's bullshit or not. And
Yeah.
the host of the show will tell stories too about, he's like, oh, that one really made my bones shudder. He's like, kind of, he hands it up, but then he's like, yeah, there was this one time when my children's room was haunted by a ghost, and he gets real with you sometimes. So that's okay. But that's kind of what I've been into traditionally.
Oh,
This year I'm listening to
man.
Spooked. I actually paid for it. It's pretty good. It's like high quality versions of those kinds of stories.
I've got a great one of those, man. Like a
You
really
do?
horrifying, yeah, like a really horrifying, terrible, terrible story.
Oh my God,
Yeah.
Sergio.
Yeah. Some spooky stuff.
That's a teaser, my friend. All right,
Yeah.
so what does October represent? Just like metaphorically, astrologically, maybe. It's a long ass month. People think about trauma a lot in October. So it's like the boundaries between the physical and the spiritual world are supposed to be thin,
Man,
according to
okay.
like spiritual people.
I hadn't really thought about that. It's been a tough month for us teachers because you don't get a break in October.
Yep. All right. So trauma, man. Yeah, like teachers going back to school. This is rough, especially in 2020. It's insane. I can't imagine what it's like to be a teacher right now.
Pretty.
So you gotta have good boundaries, right?
Yeah. It's the little victories every day.
But October is like the ultimate boundary. Death is the ultimate boundary. So, like where the boundaries blur between life and death. I think that's kind of what October represents for Americans and a lot of people around the world. And historically, it's been a time that that's been true. I think of dread a lot. I dread a lot of stuff in October, I think, just in general.
Like what?
You just got death on the mind, so it's existentially challenging. And I've got a like I remember people that used to be alive that are dead in October.
You know, we definitely celebrate El Día de los Muertos in Mexico, and not. I hate to say it, but like if you've seen the movie Coco, that's that. It really resonates a lot. The temperature and kind of like how a lot of Mexican people feel about, the Day of the Dead and basically just this whole season. And it's for me when I was little, it was always more of a happy thing. Like let's remember. And there wasn't it really Halloween and all of October wasn't really horror as much as it was like supernatural in Mexico. That's kind of what you explored. And I remember, those sugar skulls, my mom would buy me one at the beginning of October and it would last me until January. But I would lick it, just not all the time. I had some cousins who would like just a couple of licks and I'd put it away, a couple of licks and I'd put it away. So yeah, I guess you can look at October that way. I guess since my first experiences with October were those, Yeah, Los Muertos is very colorful as well, So like we're here in the States, it's a lot more dreary, darker colors. You've got the orange, you've got the I don't know, it just it feels like more of a drag. Not even necessarily, because I even love it. I love the season here, but in Mexico it's a lot more energetic. The energy is a lot more alive.
It's morose in the United States.
No.
But I think on Halloween it becomes pretty alive.
Yeah.
But just for one day. It's very Christian, right? Or I guess north of the Mexican border, Christian.
I you know what though, like they celebrate it now like the weekend before and the weekend after, but I just think that's just bar cultures of they're trying to get as much money as they
Oh,
can
okay, yeah.
out of costumes and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when death's on the mind, there's things to celebrate, there's things to grieve. Anyway, so I read this article about women having sex with ghosts for pleasure, and I wanted to tell you about it.
I'm extremely excited to hear about this.
And this is where I'm going to throw in like a trigger warning. Just, we're talking about people having sex. And in this case, they're having sex with spirits. So you can decide how consensual that is. These are all different people. I've got some quotes. This is from an article on ns-fw.com. All right. You ready? Okay, here
Okay.
we go.
Ready for this.
He was very handsome with beautiful hazel eyes, and as we made love, he stroked my body tenderly, and I could feel the weight of him pressing down on me. His body felt incredibly light. The whole encounter lasted an hour, and afterwards he whispered, "That was the most amazing thing I have ever experienced." As we drifted off to sleep in one another's arms, a voice in my head kept asking, "Is this really happening?" And then he like dies in the story. A couple of days after our first encounter, Robert arrived and said it would be our last night together. I never asked why. I sobbed when I woke, and Robert was no longer in my bed. I guess I'd been falling in love. Though I had one other ghost lover after that, I haven't had sex with a ghost for over 2 years. She,
This
maybe
person,
she's been turning them down. I don't know.
maybe, but this, she had multiple sex lovers.
Yeah, she just tosses that in at the end, right?
I know,
No,
right? She's like,
this is
oh,
other article I read where this lady had sex with like she was like, "I don't have sex with men anymore because they're not as good as ghosts."
this ghost.
It's like a
Okay.
UK magazine, like some kind of, I don't know, Inquirer thing.
I wonder about like the physical aspect of sex with a poltergeist, you know, like how
I
she
don't
said
know.
she did say is I could feel his body, its weight on top of me. It was
Yeah.
incredible, right? So there's some mass to this spirit, I guess.
Yeah, well, they have plasma.
Plasma. Well, I wonder if the ghost can concentrate all their plasma into one section of their body for this act, because plasma still isn't, to me, it wouldn't seem like a very.
Oh, wait, here, I got some more examples for you, okay?
Please do.
I used to have visits from strange spirits or whatever, and actually have had sex with them. It was very pleasurable. It was almost like I was in a real relationship with a guy. That's it for that one. That's just one person. Okay, here's another one. After several weeks of waking up feeling aroused, one night I woke up in this condition. However, this time I was somehow aware that what had happened to me was that a spirit presence has somehow involved with me sexually. I was very sexually aroused and orgasmed. I soon began seeing translucent images of him. He is not a man. He is some greenish lizard dinosaur type creature. He's not mean or scary. All he wants is to arouse me and play together sexually. It is as if he wants to transfer sexual energy to me.
You know, I wonder if the people who write these kind of like keep the night journals in which like you're
This
kind
night, tonight, last night, he appeared to me as a green lizard dinosaur.
yeah, because I'm just like that there's got to be some of hallucinogen, either.
It sounds very dreamlike, right?
Yeah.
But some people are kind of awake for it. So she says, "It obviously creeped me out. I definitely felt sick about it, but it definitely felt like something sexual was happening to me and my body was responding. It was kind of just, it's really weird and I'm not sure what's happening."
Just got confused too.
Another one says that it goes on for months at a time with a ghost. Later that night, I half woke up and discovered I was half laying on my stomach and my hips were moving as if I were having sex. I could feel a weight against me, but I knew I was the only one in the room. I didn't recall having erotic dreams. I drifted back to sleep, and that's all I remember.
See, that one to me seems like the most believable of all of them. If I were to
Okay, yeah.
stake money on being like, all right, Sergio, you know, like
Was that a ghost?
stories, one of them is 100% factual, you know, and I'd be like, all right, that's the one I'm putting my money on. Because she says that she's aware no one's in the room, right? But still, it's still half asleep, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, there's a story on the Spooked podcast about a ghost that lies down in bed next to a woman, and it just goes to sleep next to her. It doesn't do anything to her. It doesn't do anything weird. And she eventually makes it move to the attic.
Well, you know, in Mexican culture, whenever we get sleep paralysis, one of the things that we say is that a dead person is laying on top of you.
Oh.
So what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to do one of two things. Your eyes are supposed to cuss at it,
mm-hmm.
and the spirit will leave you alone, or you're supposed to pray for it. Okay. If it's a spirit, and it'll leave you alone. You cuss at it if it's a nice spirit, because it doesn't want to get cussed at. I've always grew up hearing that.
And yeah.
I'm prone to sleep paralysis. If I take a nap, sleep paralysis.
Okay.
And it freak me out because I used to think about that. Maybe these women are having sleep paralysis, and during a sleep paralysis, they're, you know, seeing these things, because during sleep paralysis, you'd sometimes feel like you're seeing a lizard man.
Who knows what, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a show called Evil on Netflix right now where her sleep paralysis, she's like, it's just sleep paralysis, you know, but it's not.
Oh.
And I've heard stories where people wondered whether what they were seeing was really just something they made up or something that was visiting.
Mm.
You know, sometimes the boundaries get a little blurry.
Well, what do you think?
Here's one. From then on, I felt Mark wanted something from me, she says. He would pull at my dress, and one time it felt as if he had pinned me down on the sofa. Another night, as I was falling to sleep, the duvet flew off, and I felt Mark's hand on my thigh. Her husband was also interviewed for this. This is from closeronline.com. That's how you know it's online. One night, when she was passing through the bathroom door, she thought she heard him whispering to someone on his mobile. He sounded turned on, saying things like, yes, do that. She recorded it on her phone through the door and then confronted her husband. But then she played the tape for him, and it didn't sound anything like his voice. And so they ended up moving out of their house because they couldn't get rid of it. And they're glad to be rid of their sex-crazed specter, they say.
Huh. Well, you know what? Let me jump on the train then.
Yeah, all right, bring it on.
If in Mexican culture and what I was brought up doing, if we like the Day of the Dead because that's when the spirits can come back and visit us, all right? If that's mm-hmm. a possibility that I accepted when I was younger, and I accepted maybe even when I'm older, it's a nice thought. You know what I mean? Maybe I accept it. I haven't really explored that recently.
Okay.
But who's to say that some spirits don't come back to get a little nookie? You know what I mean?
Or some of them may be trapped here, trapped behind the light or something. They need help moving to the light or whatever. I've heard a lot of those stories.
Well, okay, so what you're saying that it's a ghost that's here and still has maybe unfinished business and needs to kind of have one more sexual go at it before
I don't know
leaving.
I mean, there's actually a lot of stories about a lot of ghost stories. There's a good ghost and a bad ghost, so I wonder if spirits can kind of grok that there's a bad ghost sometimes and be like, oh, fuck this guy, and they're like, I'm not going to heaven yet, first I'm gonna fuck this guy up, an adventure in the afterlife, basically.
And then after he does, he's like, you know what? I deserve some sex with the person who now owns this house.
I guess. I don't know. There's evil spirits, I think. I don't know. Maybe there's good spirits, too, having sex with these ladies. There was even one that I read about an airplane hookup, in the Mile High Club kind of thing. Yeah. That was, turned out to be, one that was the woman that was in relationships with only ghosts, and she'd sworn off men.
Man, she must have dated a lot of assholes.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about trauma stories too.
We definitely got to change the.
So yeah, switching gears here. Trigger warning again. This is just gets worse from here. So. There's this common story about a lady in white that I wanted to talk about. And, there's one in particular that I remember. I think, I think it was either on Spooked or on Darkness Radio, but there's someone driving late at night. They see a woman in a white dress on the side of the road, and they pass her. They don't stop because that's crazy, and she's not hitchhiking either. And they were just like, they kind of like get a look at her in the mirror and stuff, and they're like, who the fuck? It looks like she was like in some kind of wedding dress. And the guy like comes up to this weird bridge, and he's like, he's taken a wrong turn by accident. All of a sudden he's like so spooked by what he just saw, I guess. And he's like backing up his car to get out of the construction site. He looks in his rearview mirror and sees a woman sitting in the back seat of his car in a white dress. Oh, and no. She's just looking right at him in the eyes. And he like fucking slams down on the pedal and drives the fuck out of there, right? And he drives like crazy. He's driving down this hill back to the road, and he's too afraid to look in his mirror. That's kind of all I remember from the story, honestly, but I think maybe there was something where there was a woman that was, you know, murdered or something. I don't know. These kinds of stories just freak me out where people see stuff like that.
You know, it's interesting to me that it's always, if it's a woman, she's always wearing white. She's like a white.
There's a Wikipedia article. White. Lady in white.
Lady in white. But the thing is, like, that's La Llorona. She's a lady in white, you know? Like,
okay, all right. Tell me about La Llorona.
Well, all right. So I've heard about La Llorona since I was a little kid again. And La Llorona is the spirit of a woman who drowned her children.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Yeah.
And La Llorona means the wailer, because she wails.
Yeah, she's wailing.
Yeah, she's wailing. So... The story is the basic story, but I went back and researched it a bit and found out the true origin of La Llorona. So the story of La Llorona, as people modernly know it, is that it is about a woman who drowned her children in a lake, and then she kind of regrets it afterwards. She drowns herself, and then her spirit is just constantly just grieving her children. So she goes around everywhere in Mexico. And she just goes, ay, mis hijos, ay, mis hijos, oh, my children. And, I mean, people have been up and down. Everyone knows somebody who has seen La Llorona. That's just, it's basic. Like, it's, everyone knows someone, at least. My mom, she said she saw her, like, when she was around 6 years old. My mom said that she was living in a ranch. And she stayed up late doing her planas, which is homework. Like, she was just doing like little homeworks, and she wanted to play all day. So she stayed up late, and she was like, I'm just going to do it once everyone falls asleep. I'm just going to do my little homework. My mom was a little tomboy. And she says that her window, like by her window, a big gust just kind of went by. And she heard like, she said she couldn't hear the words exactly, but that she looked up and a white, I don't know if it was a veil. She says it was like a sheet, just something white just kind of went bypassed the window. And she just heard like the distant wails, like just getting further and further away. She's up and down by that. And that's her La Llorona story, see? So everybody that you ask, they'll be like, have you seen La Llorona? They'll be like, no, but my cousin. No, but my aunt. No, but my grandpa.
Well, these kinds of stories are sacred. Like, now that you say your mom experienced it, and you told me that, and I was like, that's a sacred story, you know?
Yeah, it passed down. But what's interesting is that La Llorona originally was an Aztec god called Cihuacuatl. Now, Cihuacuatl, I don't know if you know this about Tenochtitlan, the Aztec city, Lake Texcoco.
Oh, yeah.
Floating city. For anybody listening and you don't know, so the Aztecs built a giant floating city in the middle of a lake, and that was their capital city. It was a marvel, just an absolute marvel that these Mesoamericans could pull off a floating city.
Yeah.
A floating city now, you know?
That's sick.
Don't say Singapore. That's sort of true. But basically, when the Spaniards were about to land in Mesoamerica, Cihuacuatl kept appearing on the lake. She kept appearing on the lake, and she's a female deity with a white. She wore like a white sash or like a white. So she was adorned with white.
Okay.
And basically, Cihuacuatl kept reaching out to Moctezuma. Moctezuma went out to meet with her, and she basically told him, "Rape, destruction, murder, it's all coming. Like, it's you guys need to get out of here. Like, leave." And Moctezuma like tried to heed her call, like her warning. He was very, very scared by this, but he didn't know what to do. So Cihuacuatl kept saying, "Ay, mis hijos, ¿a dónde vamos a ir?" Like, where are we going to escape to? "Ay, mis hijos." She kept calling out to her children, but her children were the Aztec people.
Yeah.
And she kept calling out to them and saying, "Oh, my children, where are we going to go?" So, of course, since she appeared on the lake, Texcoco, and since she's calling out for her children, and it was a really creepy thing. It's the first thing, I mean, it scared the emperor of the Aztecs, you know what I mean? So from there, I think that's where we got the story of this like haunting woman calling out for children in a lake, all the way back from the Aztec times, 1500s.
I didn't know that. That's new information for me. That's really fun.
Yeah.
I read about one in, I think it was the northwest United States, like Utah, Montana kind of area. I can't remember where it was exactly. It was in this article about like the creepiest story in every state.
Ooh, that's got to be a good article.
And it was just a little blurb about each one. And it was like this woman that wears a wedding dress who dives off of a waterfall. Like, surely to her death, right? But people, it's like recreated for people at times.
Recreated.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something, it's like that's maybe one of those unfinished business stories where they're like, clearly, she's committing suicide. The story that people make up is that she was left at the altar.
Oh, and she.
If I had to guess, it's something much worse than that.
You know, but I think the older generations were so dramatic with like, she was left at the altar, so she had to end her life, you
She
know?
was ruined socially.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
No
oh,
return
the
from
worst thing
that.
that could happen to a woman is that a man leaves her. Something crazy and ridiculous.
Okay, so I've heard of one of the La Llorona stories from this super white border police officer who was working in Arizona. This is a Darkness Radio paranormal podcast. Like they voted like I think he called in and told a Bigfoot story, and they were like, "You're so badass. We'd love to have you on the show sometime." And he was like, "Yeah." And they were like, "Email me," and he did. And so they did like a 3-hour one with him. I think they might have had him on twice even. But this he had a lot of stories, like one about one of his partners who like radioed him from the grave. Like his radio went off in the middle of the night and he went up there and like his partner had been dead on that very cliff. I don't know why he went up there. I can't remember. Anyway,
What?
so a lot of Bigfoot stories too, a lot of stories about like sort of this weird semi-invisible giant creature that wanders around. These are where borders are. This is October is about boundaries, right? Wherever there's a border, that's where there's a creepy story. And you know, Bigfoot notoriously hangs out on the Mexican border and the Canadian U.S.-Canadian border. U.S. Mexican, U.S. Canadian.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Why do you think that is?
I think because I don't know why exactly, but it's just something about borders that are, you know, these big boundaries where creatures of the mind will inhabit these places, and or creatures of another dimension perhaps it recognize these boundaries and use them to their advantage. Who knows?
I was about to say, do you think Bigfoot knows, like, oh, if they catch me in Mexico, they can't keep chasing me in the US? Or if they catch me in the US, they can't keep chasing me in Mexico?
I think it just it's a manifestation of the border itself in many ways, and I think it has a mind that is alien to us, whatever it is. I mean, obviously, it's a common experience that people have. So it's like being abducted by aliens. That happens a lot in borderlands, like what is it, Nevada, right?
Yeah.
The desert.
Yeah.
New Mexico in the desert. That's where these alien stories happen a lot.
In the Pacific Northwest, a lot too, like up in the mountains. Like I've also
mountains.
Heard.
Yeah, mountains. Divide areas, and that's a classic place for an alien to show up in a story. So anyway, La Llorona in this Border Patrol agent was that was probably the scariest part of the whole thing. I just remember that there's a faceless woman that's wailing at a little lake, at a little pond at the end of the story. He gets there and there's a woman there, and she has no face, and she looks like she's a teenager.
I think that the movie that's horrified me the most ever was The Grudge, and actually I would say those films. And again, you have a female character wearing white with like long black hair, because La Llorona in Mexico, she's described as having like long black hair, kind of covers.
Yeah,
can't see her face. I know what it is about, like, not being able to fully identify the creature that's out to get you, that's even more horrifying, kind of like
that. I don't know. There's a lot of, like, shadow people stories where there's this, like, classic shadow person story that a lot of people have experienced, apparently. There was an episode on Spooked about it, actually, where they, like, get on the internet and I've heard stories like that on the other podcast too, on Darkness, where like it's just like this weird man in a coat with boots and a hat, and if you get close enough to the guy, which is hard to do because he disappears every time you look at him, you can't see his face. He has no face.
Interesting, because I've heard that he appears when you have sleep paralysis. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard, yeah, like the faceless man that you can't ever really look at.
It's a very slender man kind of thing, too. It's like,
yeah,
just back there.
You know, I grew up in Mexico in a number of places, Mexico City, Michoacan, but probably the place that had the most amount of what I call magic and really superstitious and religiously superstitious people. Was in Veracruz. It's a state in the Gulf of Mexico, kind of yeah. Banana runs along it. And I lived on a farm, a mango farm for about a year and a half to two. And it was a very, very small town. It was literally a one road town. And I remember the people there being very, very superstitious and very religiously superstitious, and they believed all these things to like a T. Like and since there's so much mysticism and kind of like fairy tale lore surrounding that area of Mexico, the fables were in a way like religiously linked. Like I remember there was this these dwarves called chaneques that appear. They abduct children, and they live in the forests of Veracruz.
There you go. Forests, yeah.
Yeah, well, fun fact, actually, I was just about to tell you that the forest in Veracruz I lived 20 minutes away from was filmed Predator, the original Predator.
Okay.
So that's, you're thinking that kind of like environment.
Yeah.
Thick like, you know, jungle. And it's kind of, it's cool, but whenever you're a kid and you live so close to that much green, and you hear stories of you know, kid, child abducting dwarves or gnomes, you get really freaked out. And the reason they would abduct children is if they weren't baptized, you would get abducted and they would eat you. They would kill you. They would force feed you bananas until you died.
Okay. So yeah. Is that why Catholicism is really popular in that area?
You know, that's the thing. I did some research on some Aztec gods, and I learned about some really cool ones. Share a little bit of this with you, because it actually, they're linked to my theory of why so many people are so I guess, religiously superstitious in that area because of what Catholicism did to just the culture and even like the even the sexual culture of the Mesoamerican people. So the Aztecs, we're going to talk primarily about the Aztecs. They had these three gods that were really linked to sex. So you had Tlazoteotl, which was, she was the goddess of fertility and carnal pleasure. She's kind of like an overarching like goodness and infertility goddess. But specifically, there were two gods that were married. They were a couple. Xochipilli was the male, and Xochiquetzal was the female, was the wife. Xochipilli was the god of like illicit relationships and love and flowers, prostitution, beauty, song, dance, games, and of course corn, because Mexicans love corn. So everything that's basically like pleasurable in life and I guess delicious was this god's forte. But his wife, Xochiquetzal, she was a protector of sexuality, and she was the specific protector of prostitutes in Tenochtitlan, in the floating city. So what was really cool to me is that there was a cult dedicated to Xochiquetzal, Xochipilli's wife, that basically was a cult dedicated to male prostitution and homosexual relationships, which were against the rules in Aztec time. So you had these three gods that were present in every single ceremony that the Aztecs did. It doesn't matter if it was for harvest, if it was a blood sacrifice, if there was an astrological kind of a ceremony. These sex gods were always there. They were always a part of everything, and they were part of the judgment that went on in Tenochtitlan in the Aztec city. And you could get punished for sexual misconduct, for infidelity, for reproducing with anyone outside of your tribe. The Aztecs were very keen on keeping tribes pure. But the interesting thing is that Moctezuma had at one point up to 150 women impregnated by himself because he had one of the largest harems in all of Mesoamerica.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So to me, it was interesting that these three gods punished kind of like sexual misconduct, right? And how did they punish Moctezuma's sexual misconduct for having so many other women? Well,
The hubris.
yeah, well, Cihuacuatl shows up and tells him, hey, guess what? Everything is over. La Llorona literally shows up and tells him, you're done. And then he burns down a prostitute's house, like a house full of prostitutes, because he thinks that it's also their fault that the Spaniards are coming. So he starts to.
Blames the women he's screwing.
Yeah, in a way. I don't know if it's the ones that he was screwing specifically, but apparently,
Okay.
when the Spaniards first got there, the prostitutes were also serving the Spanish soldiers. And Moctezuma was like, this
It's
is
your fault.
talking about. Yeah, it's your fault. It's your fault that this is happening.
Look what you did.
Yeah, and then when Catholicism takes over Mesoamerica, Catholicism basically took, sexuality away from the Mesoamericans and said, this is only for procreation. Like, there's shame in this. And then those, it's all, of course, Catholicism killed all the Aztec gods. And with it, the Mesoamerican view and relationship with sex. Because, Catholicism is a very guilt-ridden religion. As I was raised Catholic, and that we were told to feel guilt about everything, especially sexual acts. So to me, it was so interesting to see these gods kind of, in my opinion, punish Moctezuma for breaking all of their sexual taboos. And in doing so, brought forth the Spanish, brought forth La Llorona, brought forth the Spanish, took Mexico from him. But not only that, took sexuality out of the culture itself. Maybe that was the ultimate punishment of those gods, is like you as the emperor abused sexuality, and now we're gonna extract it from the culture itself, kind of take it away. And
Jeez,
how do
that's
you do
really
so?
scary.
Catholicism, yeah.
Catholicism is the punishment?
Well, I would think that that's the gods kind of abandoned Aztecs. If you want to get into it that way, if you're gonna deify every religious or every religious figure in every culture, then aren't they technically all on the same playing field? Couldn't you say Quetzalcoatl and Jesus, hung out?
I mean, maybe in D&D land, yeah,
It just depends on who you think has it right, I guess.
I'm sure they're definitely enemies. I mean, Jesus says he's the one God.
Yeah, of course, of course, of course.
What was I gonna say? why we fall in and out of love. That's kind of the question of this podcast. So can we say like a little outro on ghosts and ghost stories and like even these Aztec god stories and what they say about like why we fall in and out of love?
Well, you know, I've been sort of thinking like in the back of my mind, kind of like forming a thought about the ghosts and falling out of love. And I think that when you fall out of love with someone, you still love their ghost, you know? And I don't even mean like if they died. I'm talking about, you know, the ghost that they left behind in your
home. Yeah, it's trapped in time. Like this person that you knew when you were 14 or whatever.
Yeah. And if it's like a recent thing, you still see traces of them left everywhere, you know? And they do feel ghost-like in a way, like they could just turn a corner and they might even be there. And maybe for some of these women having relationships with ghosts, like that could be where it is. Or it could be a fucking ghost, literally.
Oh. Or it could be a demon. All right, so there's one more I didn't read you.
Yeah.
God.
Read
this
it.
Is where it gets scary. All right, so okay. I was lying in my bed trying to sleep, and I felt a sensation in my private area. It felt really good, and it kept feeling really good. And then I think she's like staying the night at a hotel or something, and she invites it to come with her. This is what you never ever do. You never invite the spirit to come, all right? This is why Ouija is bad, a bad idea. You don't know if you're getting the good one or the bad one, right? If there's a bad one, there's a good one. If there's a good one, there's a bad one. Just watch out, all right? So, she puts a boundary up. She says, you can't come on to me when my husband's home.
Oh, shit.
And then some insane stuff happens, which wasn't included in the article on ns-fw.com. Some insanity happens, right? And then she does some research and realizes that she's probably dealing with an incubus, which is a demon that has sex with women.
So a good band.
So she calls a minister to help her expel the demon. And it works, apparently. Apparently there's like people you can hire in every city to come and like expel. It's always everyone's last resort. It's like, you should have just called this person like ages ago.
When you get to that part of the story. But then you don't have a story, you know? You got to have a rising action.
You smudge your house over and over with the windows shut, saying nothing.
Burning some sage.
You got to learn to say it. You got to say, get out. And you gotta open. You gotta open a window.
Get out of here, spirit.
You gotta say it. Go away.
Go away. You said Ouija board, so I gotta do it before you let me.
Oh my God.
I gotta. Oh, I gotta tell you.
You're bringing it on.
I gotta tell you the story, and it actually links back to what I was saying about like living in that small town where like the folklore and it was almost like religious in a way, you know. So I'd spent 2 years in the U.S. before I moved back to Veracruz, and the students there fucking hated me. They hated me because I spoke English. So they thought that I was this like weird kid coming from the U.S. who spoke English and just lived a very different life, even though I was their neighbor. You know, I lived in a small shack, drank out of a well, very poor. There was nothing special about me. You know, this was a very poor town, very poor village. I lived with them. I just knew how to speak English, but that was enough reason for them to dislike me. So in my class, the teacher knew I was having a hard time. So she sat me next to this boy named Jesus. This was fourth grade, by the way. Jesus, who he had been in fourth grade for 5-6 years. I mean, this kid had a mustache. He was a farmer's kid. You know, he always told me, he's like, I don't know why I have to go to school. I'm just going to inherit my dad's farm. That's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Like, this is pointless. But he had, by law, he had to go to school until he reached a certain age. So he was at school. He never tried. And all the other kids hated him because he was older than everyone. So he made the girls feel very uncomfortable. He always picked on all the boys. it was just a bad situation. So since I was kind of like, I was getting picked on a lot and he was so disliked, the teacher was like, you two should be friends. So she sat us next to each other and I was a big time nerd. So she was like, why don't you help him and he'll protect you? She literally said like, oh, this is dynamic. This is what it should be. So we kind of ran with that. I would help him with his schoolwork so he could pass and, you know, like not get in trouble at home. And he would keep all the other kids from picking on me and beating me up. Well, this school in Mexico is very poor. The school is surrounded by these big cement walls, and at the top of the walls are broken glass bottles. That's how you keep people from breaking in and stealing whatever is left to steal, which wasn't much. It was a very poor school. So whenever we would play soccer and during recess, somebody would always kick the ball over the wall. And the only person who could ever get over the wall was Jesus. He'd been doing it for years. He knew exactly where to stick his foot in the wall, where to put his finger so he wouldn't get cut. He'd go get the ball, he'd come back. So one day, Jesus asks the teacher to go to the restroom. Teacher says, you've got 5 minutes to be back. All right? Leaves, 5 minutes go by, he doesn't return. 10 minutes go by, doesn't return. 15 minutes go by, he doesn't return. So the teacher, angry, says, you, Adolfo, go check on Jesus. Go make sure that he didn't jump the wall and go home again, because that's what he'll do sometimes. He's just over. He's just done with it.
He's like, go home.
Yeah, he just goes home. He just jumps the wall where he goes to get the soccer ball, and he just goes home and doesn't come back. He doesn't give a shit. So Adolfo goes, and he comes back. He just comes back in like less than a minute. He's bawling. He's just crying his eyes out. Looks like he just saw a ghost. He is just, I'd never seen someone this scared in my life. And he comes in, and the first things that come out of his mouth are, something's wrong with Jesus. And right after he said that, five boys and five girls in the classroom start crying just as hard as he does, out of nowhere. Now this teacher, I can't imagine being in her shoes. You have a student come back hysterical, 10 more students in your classroom are hysterical, and something's wrong with a student outside of your class. So she runs next door and gets the other teacher. The other teacher comes to our classroom and says, what happened? The five boys and five girls said, well, we hate Jesus. We have for a long time. So we brought a Ouija board, and during recess, we played with the Ouija board. We took a strand of his hair and put it on a fork, and we asked for a spirit to kill him. So right after that, the school goes into a full-blown panic. The word gets out because the teacher goes and picks up the kid, drags him back, drags Jesus back, and Jesus is having a seizure. I mean, eyes rolled back of his head, foam coming out of his mouth, just spewing. And everyone at that point is freaking out. There's kids praying, there's kids crying. School gets closed. They send everyone home just because they'd never seen this. And in this small town, he was being possessed. That's what they thought. And you know what, to this day, I still question whether that's what happened or not. So he gets taken away. He doesn't come back to school for about a month. Months later, he comes back to school, and he's very different. He's a very different person. He used to be kind of a class clown, kind of like a whole very big personality. And now he's just quiet the entire time he's in class. He's got his hand. He's got a little cross that he just marks with a pencil over and over again. For the whole school day, he just marks it over and over again. So I finally ask him, I'm like, Jesus.
Like on his wrist.
Huh? Yeah, like right here, like on the, between his wrist and like his thumb, where his thumb starts, like right on like the fatty part of your hand right there. And I finally ask him, I'm like, Jesus, like what happened that day? Like, what's going on? And he goes, well, I was on my way to the restroom and I saw a shadow sit by in front of me really fast. And then all of a sudden it was in front of me and it hit me in the chest, and that's all I remember. Well, that day when we brought him back to the classroom, he kept convulsing and he kept grabbing at his chest. We opened up his shirt and he had a perfect round circle, like if somebody had taken a baseball bat and then just like poked him in the chest with it, some sort of round pipe, something. It's just a perfect circle on his chest. So I asked him, I was like, what are you doing with that cross? And he says, well, you know, they took me to go see a priest who exercised whatever it was that was messing with me. He said, but if this cross ever leaves my hands, whatever that shadow was is going to come back for me. And a week later, I moved to Texas, and that was the last day of living in Mexico. Yep.
What?
That's hand to God. That's what happened.
So you don't know.
I have no idea what happened to him. I have no idea what happened afterwards. I do know that those five boys and five girls, the day after that happened, everyone in the town shunned them. They called them witches. Nobody wanted it. They couldn't go doors anymore. Everyone kind of just was like, nope, you guys played witchcraft on somebody and that kid almost died. So from that moment on, they were marked forever in that town. It's pretty terrible. Because it could have just been another kid punched him in the chest, he had a seizure. But, you know, that's a lot of coincidences. A lot of coincidences.
And I've heard stories about spirits that will do that, that you can see a shadow that flies into you.
Yeah. I don't know, man. That's my spooked story.
Ugh. Really creepy, Sergio.
Yep.
What was the guy's name?
Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was Jesus.
Let's hope he's hanging out with the good entities these days.
Right. I mean, he's probably got boatload of kids and he's in his farm right now chilling, drinking a Corona.
With a cross on his wrist.
With a cross probably still on his head. In my thought, I always thought, like, why don't you just get it tattooed on?
But he eventually had to do that.
Yeah. Eventually, I'll bet you that's what he did.
I'm sure he did it as soon as he could pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. But his parents were very against tattoos. You remember he told me that?
Well, so, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
You got to do that or you're going to get got.
Well, I think we should wind down. So let's return to reality here.
Sounds good.
I guess I wanted to ask you, like, what's keeping you going right now? What are you excited about in October 2020?
Well, as you know, I am a teacher, so it's been a rough couple of weeks with virtual learning and hybrid education, where I've got kids in the classroom and kids at home, and quarantine, COVID took me out of the classroom for 6 months. Straight up took me out of work for 6 months, to the point where I was, I was getting cabin fever. But going from zero work to a new challenge no generation of teachers has ever had to face, like this is a completely different ball game. It's been kind of like a shock, you know. Mm-hmm. From really not doing much to doing something, and I'm a new teacher. This will be my third year. I started at in January the year before last, so that's half a year of experience. And then COVID came around and then cut my first official year in half almost. So I'm fairly new to all this. So in order for me to step into this role and have the role be completely changed tonight, is pretty shitty. So anything, I guess what's keeping me afloat right now is getting the reins on life at the moment, and really just getting back to feeling comfortable with my career so that I can enjoy in my personal life is what I would say is my career is so hectic at the moment and so hard to kind of like figure out that I appreciate and I really love the moments that I get to just do something other than that or think about anything other than that currently. But I know it's gonna level out. So I guess that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. And I really wish that we could have done costumes this year because I already had mine ready months ago.
What'd you choose?
So I got a special ordered a Mandalorian helmet.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I've got the Baby Yoda, like the actual official Disney Store Baby Yoda. So I was gonna put on some cargo shorts, some New Balance sneakers, and get like a total dad hat, and then like get the baby waist, like the baby holster thing that goes on the front, and put the baby in there, put the helmet on, and go as like dad version Mandalorian.
God, that's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Are you gonna do that anyway?
I mean, I've got the stuff for it. I mean, if there's any sort of small celebration I can, like,
see. Don't you, like, have to do it?
For school?
No, just like for yourself. Like,
Oh,
if you have all the pieces, like.
do you see how I'll be like, oh yeah, for school, you know,
Yeah.
it's a struggle bug. I would like to. I'd like to sit and kind of just sit in my Mandalorian costume.
Hell
Maybe
yeah.
people won't even be trick or treating. What am I saying? I was like, pass out candy, but no, that's definitely not going to be a thing.
Just eat the candy. There's no one's
Yeah,
coming.
no one's how depressing. No one's
Unless you
coming.
turn on the porch light, then they'll come.
Yeah.
And maybe you want that, maybe you don't.
Maybe,
So,
yeah.
speaking of turning on the porch light, what's giving me life right now is carving pumpkins. That's like my jam. I'm so into it. Carving a pumpkin. You go get one, you cut it open at the top, and then you scoop out the seeds and the goop.
But okay, so do you print out a paper with like where it tells you to how to where to
No,
cut?
you draw it
You pre
with a Sharpie 'cause you're a
Oh, you
badass.
freehand it.
No,
Yeah.
you start with a pencil. Come on. Then you do a
Okay.
Sharpie. 'Cause it's hard to draw on a pumpkin. It's really hard. It's like it's not
Yeah.
a solid surface, you know. You're gonna mess up.
I
So
always
anyway,
just make the face.
yeah, just gotta get that face right. You gotta think about like what it's gonna look like when it rots.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah. Especially this early on in the month. But this is probably airing way later in the month than yeah, I haven't posted a podcast since like last year, by the way. So
Oh man.
yeah, great.
Comeback, kid.
What's great is while you scoop out the seeds, it's really gross, like scooping out the innards. And I think there's something kind of traumatic about it. Like it's kind of gross, but you kind of love it. And if you want, you can separate the seeds and then bake them, which is badass.
Can you eat the seed just right out the
They're so
pump?
good if you like, you put some, you gotta bake them at a high temp. So don't use olive
Oh.
oil. Use an oil that has a high smoke point, like grapeseed oil and salt and pepper. And oh, you gotta put some like cayenne, just a dust of cayenne or like paprika. Just turn them a little bit red and give them a little bit of spice. Don't use black pepper,
Really?
it's not gonna work. Yeah,
I
it's
can't
really
imagine
good.
what that would taste like. Like I
It's
can't
so good,
my
man.
mouth. I'm not like
You just eat them whole. You don't have to like peel them. I don't think. I don't know. I haven't done this in ages, honestly. But maybe you do have to peel them. God, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's giving me life. I'm really excited about it.
Nice, man.
Well, thanks for doing this with me, man.
Yeah, man, this is fun.